Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking a little hiatus on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour for a couple of weeks. I'm putting together the biggest, coolest, most awesomest promotion we've ever done for Radio Row Week. It will begin on February the 5th. In the meantime, we are channeling our incredible 25-year history here of serving Baltimore sports fans truth, gospel, fun, memories, all sorts of things. Our 25 stories of glory, all presented by our friends at Curio Wellness and Far and Daughter. And I will be getting out my I'm a Blunt Person shirt shortly, as well as getting out these O-Snaps and Peppermint Payouts and unwrap the cash tickets that week of February the 5th. So circle that week. And just know you will be involved in doing a good turn. And this guy may be involved as well. We've been thrown out of Radio Row in Las Vegas. We're trying to figure out whether Luke's going to be there, who's going to be there, you're going to be there, how many people are going to be there. Dennis has a flight. Raskin, everybody's got flights now. People are calling me. Can you get me tickets? The whole deal. And I'm like, let me use a Luke Jones term here. Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes, man. You know, we got to play Pittsburgh, trying to figure all that out. Luke Jones joins us now. If you're on our WNST tech service brought to you by Coons Baltimore Ford, you'll be getting injury reports and the important things that lead up. I would say the injuries are the lead story, right? Like, and getting everybody healthy and who the opponent will be. But in the meantime, they do have to go play a football game this week, Luke. And, you know, John Harbaugh was, you know, rightfully ebullient and confident and having been down this mountain many times before, as Mike Tomlin, by the way, another winning season for him. It's uncanny. It's not uncanny. It's just, it's a testament to how great a coach Mike Tomlin is. But here comes Mike Tomlin, everything on the line, the Hatfields, McCoys, first game of the weekend. What is the lead story this week? Is it getting through Pittsburgh, or is it getting ready for Team X, mystery Team X, 3 weeks from now? Because first things first, I mean, they do have to go play this weekend.
Well, you just said it, and the answer is yes in that or either or scenario you just presented, because they're related. I mean, and when we say get through Pittsburgh, it has nothing to do with winning. I mean, it's just, look, the guys that are out there playing, they're going to play hard. I mean, it's tough to, I think where you have to be concerned, and this is why I'm not a big proponent of the idea of having Lamar play two series or anything like that. You know, the different options that you hear fans and pundits and even looking at how coaches have planned, because I think when you do that, there's these guys are such creatures of habit, right? I mean, their competitive juices are unlike anyone in the world. I mean, that's why they got to where they are right now. But the idea of, you know, of downshifting, right? You know, the idea that you're out there, but you're not really playing in the same way that you normally do. I think that's where you really have to worry about injuries. And that's where it's concerning. And that's where, for the guys that you really want to hold out, hold them out. Like, don't even mess around, right? Just keep them out of the game entirely. You understand that there's only so many you can do that with. But as John Harbaugh noted on Monday, and I think he was being truthful in saying this, there are some decisions that they have to figure out in terms of guys that are banged up right now. I mean, you look at Kyle Hamilton was inactive. You know, we're not going to see him till the divisional round, but you know, would he have been a guy that you automatically deactivated, or would that have been a guy that maybe would have played a little bit, you know, because he's on the younger side. So, but that's going to be an inactive spot, presumably. Kevin Zeitler, who, you know, went through a very lengthy pregame workout on Sunday. That knee and quad, you know, that's, you could tell he's not moving well, and he wanted to give it a go, and you could even see by, you know, just looking through some binoculars from the press box, that he was disappointed that he couldn't go on Sunday. So you want to get him right. You know, we Brandon Stevens was inactive, and you know, that's before you even get into Marlon Humphrey hurting his calf and being missing the rest of the game on Sunday, and you know, some other guys who got banged up. Although Michael Pierce came back, Daryl Worley cleared concussion protocol and would have been gone back in if they needed them to. So yeah, they've got some guys banged up. So that does complicate some of your decisions here in terms of, you still have to field a team, right? I mean, you still have to play the game. You don't have a 90-man roster. So it does complicate things a little bit, but at the end of the day, these are good problems to have. You know, these are problems that Kansas City and Buffalo and Miami and the Bengals, who aren't even going into the playoffs. I mean, they're all saying, yeah, we'll take those problems. You know, we'll weigh those decisions. But that doesn't mean that there aren't some challenging decisions that need to be made here. And if you're John Harbaugh and you're Eric DaCosta and Steve Bisciotti and the entire brass, the entire coaching staff, I mean, you're holding your breath for 3 hours on Saturday. There's no question about it, because you're not going to be able to hold out everyone in terms of guys that will be of value to you in trying to make a Super Bowl run here over the next month. So, again, these are problems that other teams would gladly have, but you do have some decisions that you have to figure out. But it is a little bit complicated, because even though I don't really anticipate any of these injuries, other than talking about Mark Andrews and you know wherever he'll be, and we'll see. If he's got a chance to play, he's going to be activated to the point where he'll go back to practice and he'll have to ramp up, because he hasn't played, you know, at this point, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, whatever it is. So, you know, but for the most part, I think most of these injuries should be guys that are good to go, you know, by divisional round weekend. But in the meantime, how do you manage that? How do you navigate this game? You do want to put your best foot forward with the guys that are actually out there, because like I said, I think you can't go through the motions in that competitive environment, because that's how guys get hurt. You know, I think that's why preseason football is, you know, we've talked about it a lot, and we've seen how teams like the Ravens, for example, have changed so drastically in how they approach it. So, you know, I think it's interesting in that way. You know, the whole rest versus rest thing, we're gonna be talking about that for the better part of 3 weeks. And then it's all gonna come down to the results, and then people are gonna decide whatever they thought. You know, they'll try to fit it into, you know, a certain agenda that says, hey, I was right, or hey, they were wrong, or whatever. But, you know, there's a lot riding on these, you know, this week in terms of just navigating the game. Doesn't matter about winning and losing. I mean, it just doesn't. They'll say otherwise, and yeah. Would part of them enjoy knocking the Steelers out of playoff contention? Sure. But is that at all a priority? No, of course not. So
remember Ryan Mallett. That's all. You know, that's all. Yeah.
Ryan Mallett, yep. You know, the late Ryan Mallett, by the way, be remiss not to mention that, but you know, Charlie Batch coming into Baltimore years ago. I mean,
he reminds me of that every time I see him.
This is why, however, and this is why we talked about this last week going into this game, and obviously the Ravens took care of business in very emphatic fashion, but this is why you did not want to mess around and be going into this game needing to win it, because it's Ravens Steelers. It's weird. And that's why I would have keep Lamar Jackson and my most important players away from that weirdness on Saturday evening. So you know, it's not something that, you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about Mason Rudolph and TJ Watt and the Steelers, other than the fact that, yeah, they still have something to play for and they want to win and hope to get some help the rest of the weekend to try to get into the playoffs. But it is interesting to kind of see the juxtaposition here, where the Steelers, now, this game means a lot to them, regardless of whether they deep down think that they have any shot at making a run, which I don't think they're good enough, but you'd still rather get in than not. And they're going to be trying to do that. And the Ravens, the guys that are out there playing, yeah, they want to stop them, but it's the question of who exactly is going to be out there. And as I said, I'd be shocked if we're not seeing the best, most significant 7 to 10 guys on the roster seeing either no action or very little action, or they might be active and standing on the sideline, which I think the Ravens, 4 years ago, they deactivated 7 guys and Jimmy Smith was active, but he didn't play a snap. So it kind of, he was inactive basically. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. You know, I don't think it's so compelling to, you know, that you're going to talk for hours about it, but it will be interesting to see how they approach that and how they'll respond. You know, 4 years ago, guys sat, their best players sat out, and they still beat the Steelers pretty handily that year. So, you know, we'll certainly see how it plays out. And, you know, we'll try to get a little bit of entertainment out of it for 3 hours before we forget about it immediately.
Yeah. Interesting weekend. Saturday night, there's a meaningful game. Sunday during the day, there are meaningful games at 1 and 4, East Coast, West Coast. And then there's the big game on Sunday night. And how our fan base, the percent, I mean, obviously Cleveland doesn't have to play now, and right, they're going to draw the Patsies. They're going to draw Jacksonville, Houston, Indianapolis, somebody from that family of the South. and have a real chance to go on the road and win, right? So it may be even in good weather conditions. If it's in Houston or Indianapolis, you get a dome, Joe can flip it. You know, I mean, play some defense. Who knows? We wonder the rest of this path. And listen, I don't want to get into the talking points that everybody else is talking about, but all anybody's talking about outside of Baltimore, not just can the Ravens, are they a Super Bowl favorite? You know, can they win and all that? But it's Lamar for MVP, Lamar for MVP, Lamar for MVP. I would say we've been hard on Lamar in this space. I think I've been fair with Lamar. I don't think I've ever been like unfair to what his accomplishments have been versus what the goal is. And that still would be the case of he's won one playoff game. We're already giving him the Super Bowl, dude. Everybody's calling me. They got the tickets. They're just going to win these three games, right? I hope they do. And I hope the kid's vindicated, right? And for all of them. But all that being said, the MVP thing, he feels pretty nonplussed by it, even though it's all around him, right? People yelling it in him. Every television station I put on New Year's Day was Lamar MVP, MVP. I told you so. Running back, quarterbacky, you know, all of that that went into it. And the fact that 31 teams have passed on him and picked up, you know, guys like Deshaun Watson instead, and how, I don't want to say underrated, you know, probably over critiqued and under understood, misunderstood, but under understood, not misunderstood, just. Nobody really understood what the Ravens were doing with the revolution a few years ago. And still, a whole bunch of owners, some who threw drinks on fans this weekend, passed on having Lamar at any cost, at any contract, in any way, and really didn't think he could stand in the pocket and do this. And I would submit to you that I've only seen him do it like this the last 8 weeks. I mean, like, this is the way it looks has blossomed into something that it didn't look like in week one or two or three. And I think he's become more comfortable with it and being coached to do it this way. And Lord knows that the benefits and having wide receivers and having protection, and he can still run or he can fake like he's going to run and get rid of it, which Flacco did the other day, crazily enough. Flacco's been watching some Mahomes and some Lamar as well. He's one of one, and he's healthy. And they're hella dangerous here 3 weeks from now. And there's no argument for anybody else for MVP. There's a McCaffrey argument, I guess, right? But forget that. That's not gonna carry water. He's not the signal caller.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I loathe this week-to-week referendum that the MVP race has been for 5 or 6 weeks now, right. Think back to like 3 weeks ago, Dak Prescott was the favorite. And then, well, he had a lousy game, so he's out. And then Brock Purdy was the favorite when the Ravens are going to Santa Clara to take on the 49ers. And well, the Ravens, we saw what the Ravens made him look like. So he's out. So then it was Lamar, you know, Lamar's MVP case. And you know, this has been talked about a lot, so I don't think we need to belabor it too much, but it's been such a fascinating look at how, not so much for Lamar, but just how we evaluate MVPs, quarterbacks in this league, understanding positional value. It's why we don't see running backs win MVP anymore, right? I mean, the game's changed and how.
Listen,
we
in the Brent Busberger era, it was how many yards,
yeah,
and how many touchdowns versus interceptions, yeah. And an interception didn't get held against you so much. They put you, Joe Namath in the Hall of Fame, right?
Sure.
So, but it was really that. Dude, it's the MVP race in baseball. You and I have argued baseball for 15 years. You better than I. Me better than you when you were a baby. But I would say it was always home runs, RBIs, were you on a winning team? Did your team win the division? You know, it was, yeah, he's a pitcher. Give them a Cy Young. You can't make the pitcher the MVP. He doesn't pitch every day unless yeah. he's Eckersley, unless he's Vukovic. You know, somebody that's taken the ball, Suter, taking the ball 60, 70, 80 times when position players, Cal Ripken's suiting up 162, right? Catchers are catching a buck 30, a buck 40 if Yogi Berra is winning or Johnny Bench or those kind of you look at it that way and you'd say, well, he's just a second baseman, Joe Morgan or whatever, Ryan Sandberg. You would say that about those players. In the NFL, man, like, you could talk about pass rushers or wide receivers or running backs or anything else. The quarterback's the guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that's that. I mean, in the same way the pitcher's not the guy in baseball because he doesn't play every day, I'd have a hard time it's the toughest position in the sport, in any sport. The MVP in football is a quarterback. It has to be.
Yeah, it is. But what has made this year so unique is you didn't have that quarterback having this unbelievable statistical season, like what Mahomes has done, like what Lamar did in 2019. I mean, this isn't Lamar was a better player in 2019, but his statistical profile, his resume, way more impressive than what the stats look like for him this year. And he led the league with 36 touchdown passes. He was sixth overall in rushing. Talking with running backs, he was sixth. He had 1,200 rushing yards.
I bet the numbers they have on the contact he took that year versus the contact he's taken this year, just in general, I bet it would look different.
It looks different, although I will continue to say you absolutely overrate that part of the equation, but I don't want to get into that. But what we're saying right now with Lamar, what we see with him is you have a quarterback who is not running as frequently, especially when it comes to the designed run game, which Greg Roman would have Lamar by design run a lot. Now, Lamar still runs a lot. Let's be clear. You know, the numbers, you know, I mean, he's leading the team in rushing still. I mean, it's not as though that has changed. He's still, with what he did on Sunday, he's leading the league among qualified rushers in yards per attempt. So that hasn't gone away. It's just
it makes him an MVP,
now.
Right?
It's just, no doubt. Right. Well, and that's part of it, right? I mean, you can say,
you're measuring
okay, well,
him against Michael Vick and, you know, Steve Young.
Right. Well, and that, but that, you know, going back to what I said in 2019, it slapped you in the face. I mean, it was unanimous. There was no discussion. He was the MVP. Was it quite as dramatic going into Sunday's game of him being unanimous? Probably not. But he had the monster statistical game, 5 touchdowns, perfect passer rating, puts an exclamation point on it. Now, 24 touchdown passes, assuming we don't see Lamar against Pittsburgh on Saturday, which I'm not expecting to, 24 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. That alone, does that sound like an MVP? No. But then you throw into the fact that he's leading the team in rushing, and okay, he's not going to have 1,000 yards, but he's up, you know, over 800, and, you know, we're talking about that. I mean, that's still silly. When you take a step back and you just think, and we're used to it in Baltimore, right? We've watched it for 5 years now. But when you still think about what he does, that's why I've said, and I'm not saying this for you. I'm saying for people who...
Well, I would keep flipping with you and say it took some getting used to.
It did, but at the same time, you saying that is proving the point.
But he's had to survive, too. He hadn't been standing up the last 2 years. So
sure.
I'm right about that. I mean,
well,
and so were the
Joe
people.
Burrow gets hurt all the time, too. So what are we,
fair
you
enough.
Know, guys get hurt. I think it's way more that it's football. Guys get hurt. And look, I said this 5 years ago. As Lamar got older, his game was always going to need to evolve for the Ravens' sake, for his sake. You know, I said at the time, and I think the comparison I used then was Russell Wilson, that you know, Russell Wilson, you know, not even getting into all that. But the point is, you thought of Lamar as run first at the beginning of his career. As time's moving on, he's still running a lot. He's still scrambling a lot, but, you know, he's thrown for a career high in passing yards this year. He has a career high in yards per pass attempt. So he's become more efficient. They're pushing the ball down the field. I mean, take a look. And this is an MVP highlight reel play that I'm mentioning here, but his touchdown to Zay Flowers on Sunday. Nestor, go back and look at the play fake he gives there. He actually drops back initially looking like he's going to throw the ball left-handed and then flips his hips and Zay Flowers is wide open. And look, I mean, I would say I could have completed that pass, but I can't throw a football that far even if no one's standing there. But just the things he does are so incredible and so rare. And you said it, he's one of one and he's healthy. The Ravens always have a chance when those two conditions are, you know, that Lamar's upright and on the field, you have a chance always. But he just does so many things on a football field that are so unique that through all the discourse and even the good discourse, even good nuanced debate as far as Lamar as a player, where he is, where he was, where he is now, where he's going over the next 5 years. I always remind people, just enjoy this, because he is so unique, you know, in the way that, you know, I think a great comparison here is the most tired debate in all of professional sports at this point, which is LeBron James versus Michael Jordan as the greatest of all time. And it's, you know, but regardless of how you feel about that, enjoy what LeBron James is doing and has done for so many years. And I mean, this guy's almost 40 and he's still doing what he does. So, but my point with Lamar is, through all of that, I mean, he's just such a special player. But to bring it back to the MVP, he didn't have the overwhelming statistical profile prior to Sunday's 5-touchdown perfect passer rating game. But boy, what a statistical exclamation point he put on his season. And that's where we have to, you know, you have to find that, where the line, where the intersection is between, yes, stats are, they have to matter. You can't just go off the eyeball test. That said, stats aren't the only thing that matter. And I think when you look at his body of work, and more specifically, this football team and its body of work, let's be clear, the defense is a massive, massive reason why this team is 13-3, a much bigger reason why this team is 13-3 than the 2019 Ravens were 14-2. It's a
way better
defense.
And that's why week 10 Lamar wasn't the MVP, right?
And that's fine. And that's fine. Look, I'm not saying I would have voted Lamar as MVP in week 10. I think he was having a better season than the statistics indicated. But
what was the Eagles quarterback then, right? That's how times change, right?
Right. And again, that's where, like I said, the MVP conversation just wears me out, because we're all on this guy, and then he has one game.
I'll be honest, dude, 32 years on the radio, and you know this about me. I like arguing Hall of Fames now, and arguing who's on an all-star team, and I liked it when I was a kid. It's just, it's not a relevant enough, who's the coach of the year, who's the all pro, you know, it's either good or not. There's a measurement at the end called the Super Bowl. They measure them by giving them Pro Bowls and doing all of this, and it's not, and all of it's political and all of it's weird, and all the Hall of Fames are. And I think sometimes the MVP thing can be that he's the best player in the league. Now let's move on. Now can you go win a playoff game or two or three?
And let's be clear, Lamar would be the first to tell you that he wants to win a Super Bowl. Look, and let's be clear, everyone wants to win a Super Bowl. So it's not like that this makes Lamar unique in that way.
Yeah, but they don't throw parades for MVP trophies, right?
Correct. And Lamar would, I mean, he would tell you, as great as it was for him to win the unanimous MVP 4 years ago, and my goodness, that was a great story. I mean, he was 22. You know, that was his age 22 season in the NFL that he did that. I mean, that's incredible. But at the same time, he would be the first to tell you, we didn't finish his job that year. I wasn't good enough against the Titans. I mean, no one was in that game. But now you look at where he is. He's a more seasoned Lamar Jackson. You know, he's got all this experience. Think about what he's been through in terms of, you know, the health challenges. Think about where he and the organization have been in terms of the contract and how that played out and how easily that could have fractured the relationship beyond repair. You know, it appeared certainly was fractured when he's requesting for a trade, but
well, WTFs in Hollywood Brown and like,
sure.
That,
I mean, so there's been so much of that. I mean, the injuries, COVID, like, and just how that, that wreaked havoc on every team, but you know, for a team that was Super Bowl ready, like they were coming out of 19, even with the disappointment, I mean, that was a complication. So through all that, for them to now be back at this stage, I mean, you have a more experienced Lamar Jackson, who is more refined, and I would not even so much the refined part, but for me, how calm he is in the pocket, even when the pocket is breaking down, and you know, he's keeping his eyes downfield. He takes off when he needs to, and that still works really, really well when that happens. But
and you know, doesn't do it nearly as quickly as he used to.
Sure,
because that's how he's making plays. He's making plays, because he's not just taking off.
But I will say this, Nestor, I agree with you. However, there were also times where, and the numbers would bear this out, I mean, Next Gen Stats keeps track of this, there are also times in the past where he would hold on to the ball way too long and create a sack, whatever. There are, he's developing a better feel. And I always think he had a better feel for this than a lot of people gave him credit for, but he's gotten better. There's no doubt. Guys get better as they get older, right? Until they get to a certain point, and then they're too old, and then they regress. I mean, that's where Russell
Wilson
is. Well,
there's feeling heat in the pocket, and there's the ability to get away from it, which he has that most other guys don't ever have and can't even think about, you know, during the course of their career. All they can do is duck and move down. But I watched Browning run around the other night, and they had a chance to win that game, right? Like, they really had a chance. He did not feel the pocket at all in a way.
He's a backup quarterback.
When you watch these other quarterbacks, they 3-2 pocket close, gone, out of the pocket. Then you make the play, sit in the pocket in nanosecond too long, and you get buried. And you get and he had to feel that too, because he was getting buried at various points last year, especially.
Well, and I like that you brought that up, because it's another talking point that helps his MVP. Not that he needs his case to be helped at this point. I mean, he's going to be the MVP. It's a slam dunk at this point. But look at how early in the year, there were some strip sacks, right? There were times the ball got knocked down. Look, that's a two-part problem typically. Yes, the O-line needs to hold up in protection, but there are also times, to your point, if you hold the ball a little bit too long, you can't expect the O-line to hold up. And that's where Lamar at times in the past, and it still happens on occasion, where if he holds on the ball too long, your protection's not going to hold up for 7 seconds. No, Jonathan Ogden can't hold a guy off if you're standing back there 8 or 9 seconds. But he's developed, and so much of this just comes with experience. I think T. Martin, as the quarterback's coach this year, has done a great job with him. Todd Monken, we've talked about at length. Lamar has done a better job, and I think those around him and he himself would even say can still get better in this way of taking the layup sometimes. And that means dumping the ball off to Gus Edwards or Justice Hill or Keaton Mitchell when he was healthy, and getting rid of the ball sometimes. His time to throw, going back, I said next gen stats, and then I went off in a little bit of a, not a tangent, but was talking about this. His average time to throw has been better this year, meaning quicker. So you could talk about better receivers. Certainly that's part of it. I think Todd Monken having a more refined passing game than Greg Roman had, which Greg Roman, we know, is an all-time run game kind of coordinator. I mean, the numbers bear that out, but if there's the weakness to what he did, it was a passing attack, obviously. So, there's lots of different variables at work here, but the point is it has been a much cleaner, better operation than it had been the last few years. And there are lots of people that deserve credit for that. But at the end of the day, number 8 is the one that's in charge of all that, because he's the one on the field doing it. Todd Monken can draw up all these plays and radio them in, but then ultimately his headset goes off and Lamar's calling the play and has to operate. And he's done a phenomenal job of that. So, it's the entire operation has just gotten cleaner and better. And I think what's so encouraging for me, not just with Lamar, but just this offense in general, is they really saved their best for last here. That Miami defense, we talked about it before the game. I mean, that defense was playing at a high level over the last 7 or 8 weeks, really since Jalen Ramsey had come back. And I mean, they just absolutely shredded them. I mean, shredded them. So you love the fact that you had this defense that, has given up a few more yards the last couple weeks than we had grown accustomed to, but they're still making splash plays, and they played extremely well considering the injuries they had in the secondary. But you have this defense that's been great all year, and now you have this offense that had been good to really good all year, but it's been great it's been great to finish the regular season. So look, you got to go out and do it. We've talked about it, and whoever they're playing the third weekend of January, we'll talk about that team, and whether it's the Browns or the Bills or the Chiefs or whoever it is, the Ravens are gonna have to go out there and play well. And they have the 2019 hard truth, as I wrote about at baltimorepositive.com. that was Marlon Humphrey gave that quote after that loss. They've been living with that hard truth for 4 years, and they're finally back at that point. Number one seed, home field advantage, best team in the NFL. Go finish the job. So, they have to do it, but boy, there's no team right now that has a better situation than the Ravens right now. I mean, it's cut and dried. I mean, there's no arguing it that they're mostly healthy. They should be mostly healthy by divisional round weekend. And to your point, we could talk about Patrick Mahomes in a big picture sense, but as it pertains to 2023, Lamar Jackson's the best player in the NFL. I mean, he's been that dynamic. And again, if there was any lingering doubt, he eliminated that on Sunday with, I mean, just an absolutely brilliant performance on the field.
Luke is here. He'll be at Owings Mills whenever they allow a quick game this week on a Saturday. Ravens kind of taken aback by having to do that, but it'll be longer rest for getting the guys that are really important healthy. We'll have injury reports, all that stuff. Might even be some baseball conversation here. You'll be hearing some of our Maryland Crab Cake Tour stuff presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Win Donation, 866-90-NATION, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube Multi Care. We're taking the Radio Row Week to a new concept this year. It's going to involve you. It's going to involve everyone that listens, everyone who reads, everyone who subscribes. We have such a thing. We have no paywall. I have to come up with something funny to say about that, but we have no paywall here at all at AM 1570. Just go to BaltimorePositive.com. Make sure you're following along. Luke, last thing, just before we roll here, because it's New Year's, and do you have any thought on who you'd like to have them see and what would be a good fight for them? Or is it, I mean, to me, you don't want to see Buffalo and Kansas City. I don't know that you really want to see Flacco. I'm rooting for the Houstons and the Jacksonvilles and sort of the lesser lights. Miami at this point, especially without Chubb, if they sort of made it through in some way, I would see them as being like, you know, especially after you beat them by 40 points. I don't know that there's any easy outs here, but they're all sort of intriguing in their own way.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, you just said it. I mean, it's still Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, no matter how kind of bad that offense has looked now for most of the season, but especially here of late. I mean, even beating Cincinnati, I mean, the field goals, you know, rather than having those red zone trips turn into points or to touchdowns. Cleveland's been talked about at length. I mean, my goodness, from a media narrative standpoint, I mean, Joe Flacco coming into Baltimore, but don't sleep on the Browns in general. I mean, the defense, you know, they're playing really well, you know, so you have them. I've said, you've heard me say it since the middle of the season, even when Buffalo looked like they were circling the drain. I said all along, from a true talent level standpoint, if they get in, and look, they still have to handle their business to get in, but I still think they might be the biggest threat of these teams to the Ravens. But Jacksonville, no. I mean, I like Trevor Lawrence when he's right. I don't know if he's going to be healthy in that team. I know they won this week, but they've been very unimpressive at the time of the year when you need to be impressive, right? They were the team. We were talking about them being the number one seed a month ago. You know, they were in that discussion, and, you know, now they're in a dogfight with Indianapolis and Houston. Of those lesser teams, you know, because you mentioned Indy and Houston, you know, Pittsburgh, I'm not at all concerned about, other than just Ravens Steelers weirdness, which I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, I don't think Pittsburgh's very good, but they're still in it and they could get in. Houston, to me, is the team that's still interesting as an underdog because of CJ Stroud. He's back now. You know, that Houston team at times this year has looked really good. And I can still think back to John Harbaugh talking about this after week one when the Ravens won that game, but didn't blow them out in the way that I think a lot of people expected them to win. And he said, keep an eye on them. They're going to be pretty good as the year goes on, and, you know, 9-7, even with Stroud having missed a couple games late in the season. So do I think they're a major threat to the Ravens?
Dude, I would have had their over-under at 4 or 5 on wins. And probably
sure, I agree with you.
And I would bet the under. I would have thought, they're really good. I mean, they're sort of upside-down organization, poor ownership, just all, you know, all the above. And they have all that going against them.
They do, and they also had quite a few injuries this year. You know, so, but that said, you know, the short list, Buffalo in terms of just whole package, I guess. Kansas City's got the pedigree, right? I mean, they've got more of a pedigree than the Ravens. You know, that's fact right now. I mean, until the Ravens do it, Lamar and all the other quarterbacks are chasing Mahomes. I mean, it's that simple. Mahomes has two. Even Flacco and Matthew Stafford are chasing Mahomes because he has two and they have one. So, you know, those two teams. And Cleveland, just because it's, you know, it's a division rival and they played well. And I'm not saying that I have fears of Joe Flacco threading or, you know, completely decimating the secondary or anything like that, because, you know, the secondary is really, really good, assuming they're healthy by the time divisional round weekend comes around. But, you know, those are kind of the three teams I'm looking at. I already said it. I think Miami has the components of eventually being a really dangerous team, but They've beaten one team with a winning record all year.
Buffalo can almost salvage just about everything here, right? Other than coming here if they win this week. So, I mean, it is fascinating that they're the one with the bullet. They're the one rising in all of this, and they have a chance now against a really depleted Miami team to, you know, put an end to them, their prosperity. And then, you know, Miami probably had to go back and play them, right? Or it'd be like that. So with 6 or 7, whatever it would be, would go back to 2. And you would think Buffalo's going to survive that. That would mean the 2 couldn't come to Baltimore week 1. That would mean, you know, Kansas City, Cleveland, you know, I mean,
yeah.
And you start to look at the possibilities of Kansas City or Cleveland being the first team, and then Buffalo waiting over the hill, allegedly, and they might be taking on Kansas City. You're lucky if you get one or the other. If you get Flacco, hey, it means you don't get Kansas City and Buffalo. You get one or the other. And I'm trying to space this out in my mind and saying, what's a good fight here? I don't know. I think Buffalo or Kansas City or Cleveland, any of them, they've lost to Cleveland already. All very formidable, and it's not going to be 56-19. And if it is, we're the greatest team ever, and they're going to write books about it, and God bless, and they might be.
But this is where, you know, it's very simple. The Ravens at their best, going up against any other team at their best, taking the Ravens every time at this point where they are right now.
Hard to bet against them, given the tape.
That said, I would have said the same exact thing 4 years ago. So you have to go out and do it, and that's why I said this in our initial post-game reaction. It's really impressed. John Harbaugh was asked about 2019. Patrick Ricard was asked about 2019. Ronnie Stanley, Lamar Jackson. I looked at it. There are 11 guys on the currently in the organization, and that's counting Tyus Bowser, who hasn't played all year, and Mark Andrews is on IR right now. 11 guys from that 2019 team are still here. And that includes Michael Pierce, who left and has since returned, you know, to become a Raven again. So it would have been really easy for them to be flippant, especially with the euphoria, the post-game locker room, to be flippant and be like, oh, we're not talking about 2019. That's ancient history, which 4 years in the NFL is a really long time, mind you. But every single one of them said, hey, you know, we have lessons to take from that. You know, and Patrick Ricard said it. Look, we're having a nice season. We're having a really good season. Don't get me wrong. But he flat out said it. Doesn't mean anything until we get to the postseason. And, you know, that's where I think there's an impressive maturity to this team that I wouldn't say they were immature in 2019, but, you know, they hadn't been there yet. I mean, I get that they had the year before and the Chargers came in, but, you know, that was just such a weird, you know, that was the end of the Flacco, beginning of the Lamar era year. You know, there was a lot of transition, you know, that year after, following that season, guys like Weddle and Suggs were gone. But, you know, that team was still so young that, you know, they weren't seasoned. They hadn't experienced any real disappointment, real adversity in the way that now you look at this team. You know, we talked about this with the Ravens in 2012. Does 2012 happen if they didn't have Billy Cundiff and Lee Evans in 2011? I don't know. Probably not, I would say. So, you know, it's taken this team longer to get back to this point now where they're the number one seed again. And, you know, I get it. They've been in the playoffs a couple other times. I'm not saying that it's been 4 years of misery, but, you know, they've gone through a lot to get back to the stage. And I think the maturity with which some of those individuals spoke after the game, when they could have easily been like, oh, we're not worried about 2019. They all said, hey, it's part of our journey. It's part of our identity as a team now. And that impressed me. There aren't too many things said after a game that I make too much of at this point, because, you know, a lot of it's just, you know, eyewash, for lack of a better
Charlie
term.
Charlie Brown. Wah, wah,
but
wah,
yeah,
wah,
yeah, yeah, white yeah, noise, yeah. You know, and I understand that. And that's not a knock on anyone. You know, these guys are 10 minutes removed from playing a football game.
I like
not
when they say meaningful things. That's the part I miss about being in the locker room, that these podium moments never feel that way.
I like the fact that they acknowledge that that's part of, you know, that's part of the story. That's part of their story. You know, I'm going to use a wrestling line here real quick. Cody Rhodes, the son of the great, you know, the late great Dusty Rhodes, he's become a main eventer in WWE. And over the last year, you know, he's been on a quest to win the WWE title. And his line that he's used is, I have to finish the story. And, you know, we'll see if he does that in Philly and WrestleMania 40 in April. But boy, the Ravens have a chance to finish the story. This era of the Ravens, the Lamar Jackson era. They have a chance to finish the story that they did not, that story that was failure 4 years ago, in such disappointment. So, boy, you know, got 3 weeks, 3 weeks to kind of ramp up before it begins, and exciting times here in Baltimore. There's no doubt about it, because I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Happy New Year to everybody out there celebrating Festivus for the rest of us, and all the Ravens flock getting ready to flock to back downtown. You know, there's no flocking away, just Vegas or bust, Super Bowl or bust. I wrote about that in columnist this week as well. Luke will be around. I'm around the Maryland Lottery, our friends at Window Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare, putting us out on the road for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be doing a very, very, very special thing the week of Radio Row. I can't wait to tell you about it. Still have a couple of our sponsors don't know about it yet, but when they know about it, you'll know about it. So, like, next week, I'll probably be rolling out some of the early details as we have nothing but time between now and January 20th or 21st, and tick tock, and we're going to watch a lot of football. We're probably going to eat a lot of pizza, drink some beer here. It's January around here. Happy New Year to everybody. Following your best weight plan with our friends at Planet Fitness. I've got Q coming on talking about getting me in shape. I got to get on some weights this year. I need to write a little bit more this year. Trying to think of what else I need. I had some resolutions, but yeah, maybe have a parade in Baltimore. That'd be a good New Year's resolution. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.